You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks, we are back and we are going to be looking at the year 1999. We're going to party like it's 1999 and talk about kinds of music and movies and kind of stuff that was interesting in 1999, because there was an interesting year. It was the year that Mike Gordon learned how to dance. That's right. And
dude, I've always known how to dance.
Oh, have you? Do tell. We want to hear all about it. Did you have your funk in 1999, Mr. Mike?
I've had my funk since 1968.
Well, there you go. So, you know, 1999 was interesting because it was a year where week after week after week was great movies, and movies that, you know, nowadays, you know, are whole household names and classics, but you know, 20 years ago these were at the movie theater, and it was, you know, early still in, you know, there wasn't any streaming, it was early in the internet, it was, you know, they had movie rentals like Blockbuster and, you know, companies like that where you know used to, you know, rent movies. Yes, that's right, folks, you used to rent movies. Can you believe that? Instead of streaming it. It was just interesting. And we're going to have a great crew to talk all about it. And Mike is going to show us some of his fancy moves. Right, Mr. Mike?
Yes, starting with the howdy.
You had to do that. The howdy move.
The howdy move, right.
That's right.
Since day one. Well, you know, for those people who weren't around in 1999, it was a dark time.
Ashley, what?
Exactly, Ashley. It was a dark time. You know, we were all living under the dark shadow of potential Armageddon with the Y2K virus looming. It was really, really scary. And these movies really helped us escape from that fear. So, that's why I think a lot of them mean so much to people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's just, it's awesome. And, you know, we're going to talk all about it. And we definitely would love to hear from you guys. And, you know, you're probably listening to this, getting very close to all your holidays and everything. So, you know, if you have still some holiday shopping to do, don't forget to, you can go to the ESO Network webpage, and which is esonetwork.com, and click on the Amazon link. And yes, you can help support the station and shop to your heart's delight at amazon.com. That's right, folks. We still do have an Amazon presence. And you know what? There's tons of good stuff. They have some amazing bargains, and the sales before Christmas is always great. So it's cool. And speaking of holidays, I want to throw something out to the folks at home. You know, please write us, as we always like to say, at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. But wouldn't it be cool? We want to see what you guys do for your holidays at home. We want to see your setups. We want to see your Christmas trees, your menorahs. You know, we want to see what you guys, how you guys celebrate. You know, if you do Christmas cookies or gingerbread houses or, you know, lights on your house. We want to see it all. Please send us pictures. We would definitely love to see that. And we just would love to, you know, celebrate the holidays with you guys. So definitely would love to hear from you on that. Of course, big shout out to our patrons. You know, couldn't do this without you. Anyone, you know, we have a nice number of patrons, and you could help support the ESO Network by becoming a patron too for as little as 25 cents a week. And you know, think of holiday spirit. Think of, you know, oh, wait, I could give 25 cents to the Salvation Army or the guy with the bell at the store, or you could give it to the ESO Network. You know, we give you entertainment year round, you know, so just think of it that way. And we're going to have more stuff coming to you in 2020, which is pretty cool. We've already been, you know, planning it, already talking about it. It's pretty decent. But enough of me shilling for tonight. Let's get started with this week's rants and raves. And we got some sad news. We had some pretty significant deaths in the geek community. And, you know, I don't know which one do you want to start with, Mike, you know?
Well, going in order of when they happened, I guess December 2nd this year, we lost Dorothy Fontana, a.k.a. DC Fontana. She was a television script writer, story editor, novelist, writer. She's most notably known for her work with Gene Roddenberry on Star Trek. She worked on the original series. She rewrote a lot of episodes. She was Gene Roddenberry. I think she started as Gene Roddenberry's assistant, but she became the story editor after, you know, working with the writers on a lot of the episodes. You know, she even, I think, was nominated for a few awards for her work there too. She was, but I mean, at that time, you know, women doing this sort of job was not common. So but you know, that didn't stop her. And she continued to work in science fiction on television and other shows as well. She worked on Fantastic Journey. She worked on Logan's Run, the series, $6 Million Man, Buck Rogers, 25th Century, Auto Man. She did some work for Battlestar Galactica, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation. She was one of the first people who helped Gene Roddenberry create the basis for Next Generation as well. She wrote an episode of Deep Space Nine later on, Babylon 5. You know, she's written some novels. And, you know, I think to a lot of people, certainly in the Star Trek family and in the science fiction community, she was always, like, available. She did a lot of conventions. When Star Trek was canceled, she was part of the reason to try to bring it back. She was a big force in that. In terms of the early conventions, she was always there. She always believed in the show. And she was pretty accessible, too. A lot of people got to know her on a personal level as well. I wish I had met her, but I haven't. I didn't get a chance to do that. And she's amazing. She was twice named to the American Screenwriters Association's Hall of Fame. So I think that says what that says in a short way her impact was, because she definitely was worthy of that award. And I know a lot of people were really sad to see that she passed. So
It was really sad to see.
Yeah, I mean, she's just one of the early pioneers of science fiction on television, you know?
Exactly.
One of the most important shows ever. So that was a pretty big blow.
We wouldn't have had a lot of the mythology we have now about Vulcan if it wasn't for her.
Yeah, I do know that she's credited with, you know, doing a lot of that work as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So that was sad enough. And for those people who are not familiar with her, just look her up I would imagine if you look at, you know, if you're a Star Trek fan and you look at her experience, you'll be like, oh, wow, she's responsible for that. And that alone will seal her place in sort of, you know, not just television history, but really just, you know, pop culture, really. I mean, like I said, a lot of people look at Star Trek and they see Gene, which is fine. Gene's the guy. But, you know, right below him, I think DC Fontana and a couple of other producer guys were right there and just as responsible for the success of the show as he was.
Oh, very much so. And then we had another big loss with from our childhood is Carol Spinney.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had mentioned Carol quite a bit when talking about the 50th anniversary of Sesame Street, which we did last month. And, you know, I said, not just his work as Big Bird, but also as Oscar the Grouch. He, you know, the fact that he did both of them, you know, is just amazing to me. Like, the fact that one man was responsible for two of the most iconic characters of my youth and in pop culture just blows me away.
Very much so.
And so they couldn't be more different, right?
Oh, very much so. They were like night and day between it, almost like the Superman and Batman, you know, of Sesame Street.
Wow, that's a very weird analogy that I'm not sure I'm going to go forward with it just yet. But and, you know, I think we were aware that Carol was, of course, getting up there. I think last year, I think he announced that his convention days, his touring days were over. You know, you can still really experience his impact. There's a great book that's out there, as well as a documentary on him that I think everybody, even if you're, you know, just know of a little bit about Sesame Street, but maybe you didn't grow up with it or whatever, no matter what your experience with Sesame Street is, my understanding is that Carol, like I said, I never met him, but my understanding is he was just an amazingly nice and amazing talent and worth checking out.
Oh, when I saw him at Dragon Con, it was worth the admission to Dragon Con, you know, to be able to see him speak and talk about his experiences and everything and the love he showed for the people. And it was returned from the people that he spoke to. It was just awesome.
And yeah, he was very aware that, you know, he had an impact on people from a very young age, and he was very responsible with that impact, you know. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And he would talk to people from toddlers all the way up to people older than us, you know, with the equal amount of respect, and it was awesome to see. And, you know, he will be missed. And then, you know, just yesterday,
you know, Star Trek fans were reeling from the loss of DC Fontana. And then yesterday to find out that that we had lost our Odo, that Rene Auberjonois had passed away after a kind of, a lengthy battle, I think, with lung cancer. I've actually got a chance to meet him a few years ago at Dragon Con, and he was very nice and gracious. He's one of those actors that, okay, I think I became aware of him on Benson, the sitcom Benson. And ever since then, I've just been delighted whenever he shows up in something. So, and that includes like when I've seen stuff that he was in prior to Benson, like MASH, right?
Yeah, he was the original Father Mulcahy from the movie.
Yep.
And, you know, he's been plenty of other roles. He had a lot of small roles back in the 60s and early 70s, but I think Benson was his breakthrough.
Yeah, I think, certainly that's where a lot of people from my generation know him from the most. Benson was a hugely popular show. And, you know, in addition to him, you know, and his Robert Guillaume as the main character, I think, you know, the rest of the cast was amazing as well. And Rene was just, you know, his comedic timing, his banter, his ability to quip was it was a guy that you didn't really like because he didn't play a likable character, but he wasn't, you know, I mean, he still kind of respected him, and, you know, he could come out with some one-liners, some shots that were just like, oh yeah, you just have to tip your hat to it. You find out that he has a great singing voice because he's, you know, doing voiceover work for movies like Beauty and the Beast. And, you're like, wow, I can't imagine that, you know? And then he shows up on Deep Space Nine as this, character Odo, which we know nothing about really when the series starts. And we find out like he and his race become like integral to the entire series, and in a way that's just, you know, not just story-wise, But character wise, you know, the scenes between him, it's sort of like Benson, the scenes between him and his colleague on Deep Space Nine, it's played by Armin Shimerman, Quark.
The Ferengi.
The banter back and forth, but you know that there's genuine respect and almost love there. Like, it's just, it turns out to be a great thing. And, you know, it's frequently these actors are chosen to play like these things in makeup. I mean, you know, Renee had to get there very early in the morning, the last to leave because his makeup is, you know, so intense. And yet he's still able to give amazing performances. I mean, it's not bad for a bucket of goo, right?
Exactly. And I loved that story. It was like, you know, he was a shape changer and he had to revert every night to his natural state, which he was liquid and basically slept in a bucket.
Yep.
It was actually really awesome. And I met him a few times at Dragon Con. So it was really nice. He was very grateful to the fans, and he was, when somebody came up dressed up to him as a character, you know, as one of his characters, it was always, the look on his face was like a grin ear to ear. So it was awesome.
He was genuinely delighted by the fandom. And really appreciated the fans, and you know, whether you knew him from Star Trek or whether you knew him for his work with Disney or later on his work on Boston Legal, I certainly appreciated him on that show, which was hilarious. The guy did solid work. I mean, if you see Rene Auberjonois' name in something, the movie might be not great, but he will be worth watching. So definitely, you know, it's just another one of those cases where, with all these people, all three of these folks that we talked about, you know, their legacy lives on in their work. And, you know, if you're not familiar enough with them, I strongly recommend, you know, checking it out, because they're all like great. They've all created classic moments that we can look back on and just appreciate.
Exactly. And we can look back on their careers and smile and just go, thank you.
Yeah, I'm grateful I got the chance to say thank you in person to Renee. I wish I'd been able to for the other ones as well, because all three of them had an impact personally on my life with the work that they've done. And, you know, they'll be missed.
Exactly. Pretty darn, you know, powerful, you know, individuals. And, you know, I couldn't picture myself growing up without Big Bird or Oscar. And to think, like you said, to think he played both.
Probably more Oscar than Big Bird.
Oh, God, yes.
Knowing you, Mike, you could probably relate more to Oscar.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, you know, you've seen my house, so.
No.
Some people might say it's a garbage ticket, you know.
No, that's not what I meant at all. And, you know, I think overall, you know, I mean, I know we've had some years. Whew, there was a year, I think, in particular, like a few years ago, where it seemed like every week, you know, we were just sort of opening the show with a loss of someone, you know, that we admired. And this year really hasn't been as numerous. I mean, certainly there's been a lot of folks. And, you know, it's not something that we love doing as far as opening the show with this kind of stuff. But I thought, you know, I think either one of these three would have been warranted, you know, mentioning on this show. But certainly all three of them were like, yeah, we have to. You know, we have to say something. And this is going to be the time of year where, you know, Turner Classic Movies and some other folks are going to be putting up all their like tributes to everybody that we've lost this year. And it's just that time of year. So it's a shame when it happens like right near the end. But unfortunately, I think that's not uncommon for December to be full of that. So
Oh yeah. And it's only gonna, like we keep on saying, it's only going to get more and more as we get older. A lot of our history is going to be fading off.
It's true. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's not something that it's, well, there's very little about getting older that you have to look forward to. And that's definitely something that's right up there in the top 10.
After 21, you know, it was all downhill from there, you know.
Oh, if I'd only known.
Exactly. But now you know, and we definitely would love to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to be jumping into 1999.
Party.
So let's party like it's 1999.
Party.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. I'm excited because we're getting into holiday movie season here, and we're getting close, but not quite, to Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. It's my most anticipated movie of the year, and it feels like I've been waiting forever for it, but it's nearly here. In the meantime, we do have some fun movies to tide us over. The first one of those we're going to talk about is Jumanji The Next Level. Now, a couple of years ago, when they announced the Jumanji reboot, a lot of fans were skeptical. The original is well-liked, it's a fun movie, and a lot of times it just doesn't work out so well when Hollywood tries to return to a well-loved property and do something new with it. A lot of times it can end up falling flat. But the Jumanji reboot actually turned out to be so much fun. It was hilarious. It was entertaining, some great action sequences. They had the great idea to update it by having these kids pick avatars in a video game, and then the avatars were played by famous people like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It was a lot of fun, so I'm also excited for the sequel called The Next Level, but I'm also a little bit skeptical again, just because I'm not sure that lightning can strike twice. I mean, the reboot was unexpectedly so much fun, and I'm just a little bit nervous that they might not be able to capture all that magic again, but I'm definitely going to go see it. We'll be curious to see what the buzz on this one is and how long it'll stick around, especially with so many big holiday movies still to come. If you're not quite in a holiday mood yet, you might be more interested in the holiday horror flick Black Christmas, about a sorority where things go wrong. I think this is a really great example of counter-programming. It's technically a Christmas movie, but it's horror, so I think it'll bring in some fans of that genre. Also in wide release, we have Richard Jewell, the drama about a security guard who's caught up in the 1996 Atlanta bombing. And finally, we have Uncut Gems, a movie that I'm going to bring up just because I found it interesting. I am not the biggest Adam Sandler fan, especially when it comes to his comedies, but he stars in this and it's getting really fantastic reviews. It's a crime thriller about a New York City jeweler. So I'm curious enough that I might actually end up checking this one out. It's always interesting to see when comedians do something that's not a comedy, that's not meant to be super funny, and to see how that works in drama. So again, not as much a fan of Adam Sandler, but this one does kind of intrigue me, I have to say. On DVD this week, we have It Chapter 2, if you're looking for some scary clowns in your life. Then also Quentin Tarantino's latest film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I only got a chance to see it one time in theaters, sadly, but I think it was definitely one of my favorite Tarantino movies, and I cannot wait to watch it again. And in terms of streaming, on Netflix, the movie Marriage Story is now out. I've been hearing a lot of Oscar buzz about it. I watched it and it was amazing, so definitely go check that out. And that's it for this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, be sure to check out my blog on the ESO Podcast website, where this week I am actually reviewing Marriage Story.
Hey, pardon interruption, but do you want to learn more about love, lust, sex, anger, happiness, music, time, space, and the human race? I hope you do, because I'm here to beg you to listen to Soulforge Podcast. We're your weekly dose of life and living here on the ESO Network. Find us wherever you listen to podcasts and soulforgepodcast.com. A proud partner of the Rusted Robot Podcast here on the ESO Network. Let's find out together.
Hey everybody, Michelle here with a super fast Iconic Rock Talk Show moment this week. Last week, talked a little bit about reunions happening in the music industry, Bikini Kill, My Chemical Romance, Doobie Brothers, but I'm sorry, I forgot the most important one, and I know you've all been waiting. It's been 10 years, but yeah, guys, the Pussycat Dolls are getting back together. Woohoo! They are touring the UK next April, and they say a new album is in the works. They were on the UK version of The X Factor last week with a performance that made a lot of people happy and created a little bit of backlash about costumes that let everybody see a whole lot of the Pussycat Dolls. Like, that's a surprise. Also, there were a few complaints about S&M dance moves. I'm not really sure what an S&M dance move is, but I guess they had some. Also, this week, there was a lot of new music out. What may be, very well may be, the final album by The Who, called simply Who. Also, the cast recording for the Alanis Morissette Broadway jukebox musical Jagged Little Pill. And it's the season, so a new Christmas single by Taylor Swift called Christmas Tree Farm. And Harry Styles dropped a single called Adore You in advance of his album that's out next week called Fine Line. This has been a quickie version of the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. The blog is iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Earth Station One. That's right, folks. We are going back in time, and we are going back to the year 1999, where it seemed like every movie that came out that year was an amazing film. And we're going to try to fit it all into an hour. Go for it, Mike. Start.
Well, yes, it's going to be difficult because it was a pretty big year. I think there is a trend there. You know, 1939 is considered by a lot of people one of the biggest movies ever, years of movies ever. Wizard of Oz, Gone with the Wind, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Stagecoach, Hunchback of Notre Dame, among many, many, many others. And then fast forward 30 years, 1969. We've already talked about some of the movies that are celebrating their 50th anniversary, like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Midnight Cowboy, Easy Rider, True Grit, and of Honor Majesty's Secret Service, and of course the classic computer wore tennis shoes. And now we're at 1999. So it's like every 30 years, it seems like there's something about turning that corner into a new decade. So I'm anxious to talk all about 1999 movies with you guys. We've got Alex is here with since we're talking movies.
It's like a prerequisite.
Yeah,
discussing movies, I have to be here. It's in my community service.
Well, considering Ashley wasn't even an embryo at this point in 1999, so we had to search somewhere, and we got Kevin Eldridge from the Flopcast.
Yes, hello everybody.
We appreciate you jumping ahead a decade, because I know the 80s is usually your thing.
Yeah, this is like the far-flung future in the world of the Flopcast. We're getting super modern, only dipping back 20 years.
Yeah, so a lot of spoilers for you as far as what is going to be the future of movies.
That's right.
But thanks, guys, for joining us. Because this is a crazy year. I don't even think at the time I realized how crazy this was. It just was. It seemed like I think I probably was at the movie theater at least every other weekend, if not every weekend. I'm not sure. Well, where to start, right? I guess we'll just go with movies that you feel need to be mentioned. We'll start with, well, wait, before we do that, Alex, do you have any idea what the box office was like this year?
It's funny you should ask. I, in fact, do know.
I ask it every time you're on the show.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that Mr. Faber said, get me these numbers. All right, fine. One of the things I love about this is that for the last few years, we've seen the same thing over and over again. The top five is your superhero movie, your Disney remake. Your superhero movie, your Disney remake. Throw in a Star Wars, your Disney remake. You know, that sort of thing. Just from the top five for 1999, number one, Star Wars The Phantom Menace, which made $431 million. Whew. Which good enough. Yeah.
And that was all the first weekend, because after that, word got out about it.
It's funny you say that. They actually made only $83 million in its opening weekend. And really? That was, yeah. I actually looked it up. The first movie to ever break $100 million its opening weekend didn't happen for another 3 years, when Spider-Man, Sam Raimi's, was the first to break $100 million.
In 2001? Wow.
2002, I think. Yeah. Oh, whichever cool. one it was. Yeah.
The I have to say, and you know, sorry, Alex, but no. You know, talking about just not the movie, but just the event of Star yes. Wars: Phantom Menace, it was huge. I mean, it started websites like what countdown.com mm-hmm. started that way.
And you always have to look at ticket prices as well. The farther back you go in time, you know, tickets were cheaper, and so it was
right.
Oh yeah.
Right.
As time goes along, it's easier to hit that 100 million mark when they charge a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah, and plus, I think it probably opened, like, I think a movie now opens wider. Although I can't imagine any movie like I can't imagine Star Wars: Phantom Menace not opening that wide, but I do know that. Like where I saw it, they had just opened a multiplex theater. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we see, like we saw more of those spring up after this. And so there are more screens now. Right? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, they were still around, the multiplexes.
The multiplexes and everything. But I think now you're not looking at multiplexes. You're looking at Googleplexes where it's, you know, it's very hard to believe a theater is going to open with less than 10 screens. So. Whereas, you know, at 99, you were still getting your 6 to 8 screen theaters, some even 4 screens.
Yeah, there was like it seemed like there was a new generation of movie theaters mm-hmm. was springing up in the mid to late 90s, and probably especially Titanic in 97 had an influence on probably
your 96, 97 would have been the start of stadium seating.
Right.
Which just makes stadium seating now feel old. But getting back to
No, that makes us feel old.
Yeah. Number two on the list.
There's a difference.
Yeah. I'll get these stadium seats off my lawn. Number two, and this surprised me. Number two, because again, the way that my mind thinks now, it's either superhero movie, da 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 da. The Sixth Sense.
Wow.
M. Night.
Yeah,
$293 million.
When you look at some of the other movies that came out that year, that is shocking. Mm-hmm. That really, I mean, although give M. Night credit, I mean, that's the movie that made him, and everybody was talking about that.
He hasn't been able to come close to it since, truthfully.
No,
no,
that hasn't stopped him from trying.
Yeah, number three was Toy Story 2, okay, which really was the birth of the franchise. And it did that at almost $243 million. Number four, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Yeah, baby.
Can you think of a time where a comedy sat in the top five in the last 10 years?
And that wasn't one of those like low budget, you know, sort of simple comedies. That was a big budget comedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And number five was The Matrix with 171, almost 171.5 million.
Well, I remember, though, The Matrix came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it really did. No one was prepared for that one.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, you know, when The Matrix opened, it grew with word of mouth because it was just, you know, it was a nothing film when people were like, when they saw the previews, another campy sci-fi thing and everything with Keanu Reeves, and who had done, you know, at the time he had done Hellblazer and, you know, stuff like that. And it was just like, okay, well, no one really went to go see it, but then word of mouth started getting out and just grew and grew and grew. I was so glad I saw that in the theater when it was, you know, 99.
Well, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, I mean, it was hard to market because there hadn't been anything like that before.
Yep.
And even though Keanu was in there and some recognizable names, it wasn't like a huge, huge starring cast. I mean, it would be later. And then ultimately, like I said, it was hard to market. I mean, it was really true. Like, no one could really tell you what The Matrix was. You had to experience it for yourself, right?
It really coined the phrase, have you seen The Matrix?
Right.
And you know, I mean, honestly, if the internet now had been then, you'd have an entire group of people just devoted to hating this film.
That's true of how
wrong it is and all that stuff. But no, I mean, at the time, I knew no one at that time who wasn't raving about The Matrix, and I didn't see it until after it was on DVD.
Wow.
I do want to give a couple of mentions to two other films that were in the top 10. And the reason why I want to mention them is because it shows just how diverse 1999's top 10 was. And number seven was Big Daddy with Adam Sandler, which pulled in $163 million. And this is truly, I mean, this is the peak of Adam Sandler. We're talking Wedding Singer, Big Daddy, The Water Boy. These were like the time to be Adam Sandler. So it's crazy to have seen this mixed in with like The Matrix and everything like that. But number 10 with $140 million, The Blair Witch Project.
This is a time when, I mean, the thing about these movies is they're not just like great movies, and we can argue the greatness of them or whatever, but there's a few on this list that are, I mean, game changers.
Yeah.
Right.
And
I definitely think Blair Witch is up there with that.
Marketing campaign for Blair Witch is something you could not get away with now.
They created an entire genre of films with that. The whole law of found footage stuff.
Oh God, and shaky cam. Oh
yeah, yeah. As much as The Matrix is kind of derided and poked fun at for the circle cam or bullet cam, I guess is what they called it. The Blair Witch Project shaky cam aspect, where suddenly everything has to feel more real because nobody can put the camera on a steady. Is pretty, I mean, this was groundbreaking at the time. I mean, they made the movie for like, it was $130,000 or something like that. It was like a ridiculously low amount.
And also the way they used the internet, they used websites to promote it, and that very clever marketing campaign. And this was kind of still the very early days of the internet where that really wasn't done.
Oh, exactly. I was just thinking it's like the internet at the time, you know, it took at least 2 hours to download a preview or something like that.
Well, it makes me wonder, would the Blair Witch Project then therefore be the first viral thing on the internet? I mean...
You mean after Dancing Baby?
Okay, good point.
And don't forget Dancing Hamster. Come on.
But yeah, like they were putting stuff on there. They had websites and things that was trying to create the idea that this was real footage that was found. You know, they were really using it in that way, and it was such a groundbreaking event of a movie at the time. And I remember I was at San Diego Comic-Con that summer, and just to show you how far San Diego Comic-Con has come, one of the big guests, it was like people were so excited that she was there, it was Heather Donahue from Blair Witch Project. Like she spoke in Hall H in the big room. That's what a phenomenon that movie was at the time. And also like mentioning the use of the internet, like again, that was such the Wild West early days of the internet. Like I remember seeing ads for 10 Things I Hate About You, which also came out in 99, and seeing in the commercial, go to 10thingsihateaboutyou.com. And I remember being amazed by that. What, they made a website just for a specific movie?
Mm-hmm.
Now they're making movies about specific websites.
True. Any mentions of, or any thoughts of the top five as far as quality, as far as anybody's, you know, personal favorites or anything?
I've seen pretty much the top five probably at least 24 times each. You know, it's easy to do because, you know, it fit a lot of into genre. That what we're into and stuff, what we talk about on the show, what we talk about in real life at cons and such, you know, I probably saw each one of those at the theaters And I can't even say nowadays I've seen the top five movies of this year at the movie theater.
Oh yeah, that was another big takeaway for me just going through the list of movies from 99 is, wow, I used to go out and go to the movies a lot more. Now it's like, is Iron Man in it? No, that, I'll wait.
I love the idea of sitting there, because you know in 99 we're like, yeah, you know, I'd go to more movies, but are you kidding me? $6? Yeah, right. What, are you insane? I'm not doing that. You know,
I
matinee for three? Come on. Yeah,
come on.
I think though that, you know, obviously the internet was just sort of getting, people were figuring out how to use that properly. But also, you know, in terms of seeing movies, you couldn't just see it like in 3 months on streaming, right?
Right.
I mean, it's the whole setup was, if you didn't see it in the theater, you'd have to wait months, sometimes even like a year or so.
Yeah. If you wanted to see it on HBO, it was probably at least a year.
Right.
You know, to do that.
Close to.
But it was like 6 months for it to come out on video.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, and I don't even, this is early DVDs.
Yeah. I mean, Blockbuster's still open at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is, I don't know when Netflix started, but it might have been around.
It was around already. So it was just, I think Netflix started in 99.
And the one thing that I really took from, not just the top of the box office wise, but as far as just the, when I was looking at the list, I was like, man, look at how, like, yeah, there's franchises here. But they're like every other movie, or like, you know, they're spaced out enough where there's so much original content. I mean, the fact that we get, okay, so the Matrix, I'll put the Matrix in there. Matrix, Blair Witch Project, Fight Club, American Beauty, Being John Malkovich, Sixth Sense, Eyes Wide Shut. I mean, these are movies that like you just, I don't know if a lot of them would be made now.
The Iron Giant.
That's where I was going.
Yeah.
That good is call. Yep. Iron Giant was, I was like chomping at the bit to say Iron Giant.
Yeah.
Iron Giant's in there. Yeah. This is the year the American Pie franchise starts.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, and that was really a return to like almost 80s style, you know, teen sex comedy, which we get.
There's a very Porky's-esque vibe.
There was so much of that in the 80s, and then it went away for a good decade plus until this one. And that was also an example of a movie in which they used webcams and internet, the kids at the high school.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was novel to see that kind of new technology in a movie.
Yeah, it's like, let's use this new technology to peek at people like we do in the showers, right? Like the shower scene.
Right, right. Yeah. That was the modern equivalent of the shower scenes is now, you know, we point a webcam at Shannon Elizabeth.
Yep.
You had multiple I have no downside to this. There's multiple R-rated comedies in the top 100.
Mm-hmm.
That strong in the top 100. American Pie as an example was number 20 for the year. South Park, Bigger, South Park. Longer, and Uncut.
Oh, God. I remember when at the Academy Awards, Robin Williams sang Blame Canada because they wouldn't let him sing Uncle Parker.
Yeah.
And it's like,
well, that was the one that got nominated.
Oh, yeah. You know. And that was, they were worried that he was going to break into it, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And everything. Well, you also had Galaxy Quest.
You had Galaxy Quest. Some great films.
Oh, yeah.
Galaxy Quest is amazing. If you look at that one now, I mean, I'm about to say you can't make it with that cast right now for obvious reasons. But honestly, if you look at it, I know, which sucks. At this point in time, Tim Allen, who's the star of the movie, is probably the easiest to get. You know, Sam Rockwell has gone on to bigger and better things. Tony Shalhoub.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you just take a look at I mean, even Justin Long's going to be more expensive.
Rainn Wilson. That was his first movie.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So.
And
yeah,
Veronica Mars's crazy dad.
Yep.
Sigourney Weaver's probably just at that same status.
Yeah, but she was.
You mean the, perfect?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you also, you know, Galaxy Quest was amazing because it was, you know, you didn't. Oh, that was another one. Was it? You didn't know if it was going to be like a Naked Gun type movie, like a parody, or such, or you know what? And then to find out it was a real story, a true story, and it was an homage, a great homage to Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
At that point,
it's actually been listed as one of the top Star Trek films of all time.
Oh, I would rank it almost right behind Wrath of Khan. Yeah,
really, really high up there. Yeah. But no, that's a great film, and it's so funny because it's just been like just a part of our lives for the last 20 years.
Oh, it was. But you also had beautiful stuff like The Green Mile that year, which was just amazing. And because I remember picking the serial books of that up in earlier in the 80s.
Okay.
And because they released that not as one full novel, they released it as a serial series of books.
Yeah, that was Stephen King was trying to go for almost the way Charles Dickens novels used to be released, like a chapter at a time.
Exactly. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Ding, ding.
Yeah, just making more money that way.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I have to say, one of my favorite memories of going to the movies in 99 was I went to Disney World for a week with my mom. And we always loved going to the movies. It was just something that we did. Something about me being quiet for 2 hours. And we went to downtown Disney in Pleasure Island back then and went to the movies. And there was a movie there that I wanted to see. And she had seen something from the director previously. So we went in and sat down at Disney World and saw Dogma.
Wow.
Oh. it is my favorite Kevin Smith movie.
It's a great Kevin Smith movie, but can I tell you just how awkward the movie The Golden Calf boardroom scene is when you're sitting at the House of Mouse?
Good point.
There, I thought you were going to say you saw Eyes Wide Shut there, and I'm like, okay, well,
no,
okay,
not with my mom.
Dogma's just as awkward. In some cases, maybe even more so.
I saw that in the theater at least 3 times. It was so fun.
Yeah, yeah. And this was Kevin Smith really growing by leaps and bounds as a filmmaker, and that this was a big movie and an ensemble cast and a road picture and supernatural visual elements. There was so much going on in this where when you look at where he had started just a half decade earlier, you know, black and white movie in the shot in the convenience store where he worked at the time to what Dogma looked like was just amazing.
And it was a who's who of casting, too. It was just amazing.
I dare say, though, I mean, if you look at things like Dogma, Eyes Wide Shut, American Pie, Spy Who Shagged Me to an extent, and South Park, I don't know if those movies could be made and released today.
South Park doesn't get made.
South Park, no. Austin Powers, I think so. Would be.
I think Austin Powers gets made, but nobody goes to see it after The Love Guru.
Touche. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as the climate that we're in, it's just like that's a lot of that stuff just, you know, wouldn't make it past the studios. It'd be like, no, we can't release this.
Yeah.
Certainly something like American Pie couldn't be released.
American Pie, if it gets released on Netflix.
Sure.
Yeah. I could see that. That totally makes sense. It would be interesting to see how it would be made, though, these days, too.
Well, I think the closest equivalent is a few years ago when they made that parody of 86 comedies, right? That that summer camp movie, right? Am I just the only one? Red Hot Summer or something like that?
Oh, Red Hot, yeah.
Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah.
Well, that was more of a parody of those movies, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, it was a parody of like Meatballs and those
right
movies. But and that was a long time ago at this point. That came out like, what is 2001, maybe something like that. That's almost as old as we're talking about.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
They did there was a sequel series more recently. A
prequel.
Yeah, yes.
Prequel. Using the same cast.
Yes.
With all of them older and nobody saying a word about it. But yeah, it was all leading up to the end of the summer.
But it also about movies not being able to probably be made these days, at least at the movies, probably Eyes Wide Shut. Probably
definitely not.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, well, Kubrick has a lot of leeway, right? So, I mean, I think he gets it made, but it only, you know, it doesn't have a wide release. It's only like an art cinemas, and maybe it's something like what we're seeing with The Irishman now, yeah. right?
Well, where exactly.
It would limited be directly release to in the theaters, and it goes right to yeah. Netflix or whatever.
See, yeah. even at the time, and the movie was released posthumously, and they were actually messing with the visuals of it before the actual release, right? That didn't they kind of yeah. cover and they added some things to cover?
Yeah, there was some work behind the scenes on it. I know that Spielberg did AI. As a tribute to Kubrick, but I think if I remember correctly, Spielberg also helped finish Eyes Wide Shut.
I think so. I think
if I remember correctly, honestly though, if we want to talk about, you know, movies that don't get made, let's talk about 8mm.
Oh God, yes, you're so right.
I mean, this is a movie that launched J.J. Abrams' career. And there's no way in 2019 that a film like that gets made and gets released in a big way. And it wound up, I mean, it wound up pulling in 36 million. It was number 56. It was right behind Fight Club.
Really? It was overall. That high up? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. 8mm was 56. Fight Club was 54.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. It's, that, you know, because, you know what, you know, we have Star Wars coming out that year, and yep. then JJ had his first big hit,
mm-hmm.
and the irony right there is just beyond belief.
Yeah,
with what's coming out in 2 weeks.
So I find it funny looking over this entire list. You look at the top 20 now, and the movie listing is very much superhero movie. You know what the top superhero movie of 1991 was? Mystery Men.
That's right. I was gonna say, you're gonna say Mystery Men.
I knew yeah. you were gonna say, well, Mystery
Men. I mean, what's it up against? That was the superhero movie.
That was the superhero movie. And it finished in 68.
Uh-huh. I went out and saw it.
Oh, I did too. But that was considered not that successful.
Oh no, yeah, no, that was yeah. a quiet little movie that came and went without getting much attention. Even an amazing cast. You know, when you look yep. at that, so many stars of kind of comedy of the 90s were, you know,
yeah, I think cast. I had seen it like 6 or 7 times before I realized that was Eddie Izzard.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
As one of the bad guys. Yeah. It just didn't click with me.
Yeah. But man, I mean, Paul Rubens, Ben Stiller, Janine Garofalo, yep. William H. Macy. It was,
even though it was based on Burton's comics, it really was satiring something that a lot of people weren't familiar with. I think now, you know, people would get it a lot more than at the time.
Yeah. I think it was very much before its time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people had no idea it was based on a comic book either.
Well, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, exactly.
It plays better, in my opinion, on a smaller screen.
Mm.
I think on video and on DVD, the movie is a riot. And on the big screen, I just felt like I wanted more from it. I saw it at a sneak preview. I saw it a week before it came out. And that was really an interesting experience. But the overall thing for me was that it's grown on me. It's definitely grown on me. And I think it's possible that just because of all the wide amount of superhero movies that we get now, I'd honestly love to see a re-release of this movie so that people can sit there and go, they're making fun of movies that came out 20 years later.
I always wanted Janine Garofalo's bowling ball, though. That was so ripping awesome with the skull inside of it.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
It was just like, wow. But we also, speaking of horror, we had The Mummy with Brendan Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that wasn't really horror. And I'm really horror shocked.
Adventure.
I'm really, yeah, it's more of an adventure movie. It's bringing back sort of that Indiana Jones vibe. We all thought Brendan Fraser was the next Harrison Ford, and yet that didn't really pan out. But I'm shocked. Well, yeah, okay. I was going to say, I'm shocked that wasn't in the top 10, but it was number 6.
So. Yeah, it was number 6.
Yeah, it's really I love number 8,
the Tarzan was actually number 6.
the juxtaposition to me that's really interesting is something like The Mummy, which is they've taken a classic horror movie and making it a adventure movie because Universal was remaking the Universal Monsters. Dracula did really well. Frankenstein did not. So they were really concerned about what to do about The Mummy, and enter, what's his name? Stephen Sommers, right?
Yep.
Who brought this like sort of fresh idea to it, and it worked. Whereas, to me, the great juxtaposition on that is to look at a franchise which they kind of tried to bring back in a big way and it failed miserably, which was Wild Wild West.
Oh, God. Well, that was Richard Donner, wasn't it? No, it wasn't.
No.
It did Wild Wild West?
No, Wild Wild West was
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Barry Sonnenfeld. Yeah, because I remember Kevin Smith talking about the giant spider that he wanted for the Superman movie.
Right, and that was John Peters he was talking about, I believe.
Because I remember because he said he went to see Wild Wild West. There was the spider,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that was it. And in the early discussions about Kevin Smith's version of the Superman movie. Yeah, I think it was John Peters. Wanted a giant spider.
Mm-hmm. And so
I still to this day have not seen Wild Wild West.
Sadly enough, I was bored on a Saturday afternoon. It was on TNT.
sum it up real quick. Racism, racism, racism.
Wow. Jeez, really?
Innuendo, racism, innuendo, innuendo, racism, giant metal spider.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
I think it was also the first time that Will Smith proved like vulnerable.
Yes.
Because up until this point, he owned July 4th weekend. Like, you couldn't, I mean, studios was like, were like, no, we can't put anything out the week of the 4th or even like the week before or after because of, Will Smith's got something coming out.
Nope. Yeah. And this just didn't flop. Like softly, it flopped bad.
Yeah, it really tarnished. I think I don't know if he ever had a July 4th weekend that worked that was like as big box office after this.
I don't think so.
It just went down for me. Like,
yeah, not his strongest work.
No, but you also like this year you had Office Space.
Office Space. What a nice little movie that was, huh?
Office Space was wonderful. Because that also came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and that's one that not many people actually saw when it came out. I think that's one that really grew in home video and cable and whatnot.
And word now of mouth. Now everybody knows that movie. Oh, everybody knows what, everybody knows what Flair is. Everybody knows what, the joke about, my stapler. My red stapler or, about the memo stuff. Like, this just it just spoke to everybody who has a job that they hate, which is almost everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was supposed to be a Jennifer Aniston film, because she was still very big with Friends. And they thought, oh, let's move her to the movies. She'll be a superstar. You saw where that went.
I don't think that's what's the thought. I mean, I think maybe they hope that. But, I mean, it's not like she costs a lot. I mean, she's making this little low-budget movie that's made by Mike Judge, who's also got, he's known at that point. Had he done King of the Hill at that point?
Yes. Yeah, he was mostly known for Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, right. King of the Hill was from 97, I believe it started. But he was certainly known as an animator primarily until this one. And now he went on to do a lot more live action movies and now Silicon Valley, which is great. But this really established him as, no, he's not just a cartoon guy.
Yeah. One of the good things from the 99 films is I think a lot of, again, we're talking about a little bit of risk taking, definitely going outside your comfort zone. Can we talk about Man on the Moon for a moment?
Oh, Andy Kaufman's story. That was awesome.
And again, that was one of those ones, much like that one in the Truman Show. We all just expected Jim Carrey to be walking away with an Oscar when it was done. That movie was so well done and so interestingly put together. because there are times when you just kind of wondered how much of what we were seeing was true to the story. And I think to this day, I think it's one of Jim Carrey's best performances.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. And that was, Danny DeVito was very involved mm-hmm. in the production of that, as well as yeah. as one being one of the stars of it. And yeah, so it was, we've seen so many kind of biopic things, and it's a case of they found the perfect guy to just do a perfect job playing Kaufman. Yeah. And also they just told the story in a very entertaining way, which is, when you're telling the story of someone's life, that's not an easy thing to do, because
no,
what do you put in, what do you leave out, how does the pacing work? And they did it.
But it was awesome.
I remember going to see Man on the Moon, and I don't know if you guys had the same experience, and because I know that at some theaters I know did not do this, because I asked about it, but the very beginning of the movie, he just comes out and says, well, that's actually the whole movie. And you know,
yep, like the credit starts rolling.
At the theater that I was at, they brought mm-hmm. the house lights back up.
What?
Nice. Yes.
Oh, that yes. is awesome.
Oh,
yeah.
That's brilliant.
Such a clever touch. And again, that's something that you're only going to get in an actual movie theater. And I don't know yeah. how many theaters did that. Was this just an idea they had at my local theater or what? Because I asked a couple
whoever
of people.
Whoever did that, that's genius. That.
Yeah.
So. That is genius. I love the fact that they got so many people involved in it. I mean, you've got, you know, David Letterman doing the Lawler spot.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You have Jerry the King Lawler in it.
You had the whole cast of Taxi.
Yeah, and I love that when they show the cast of Taxi, the one person who's not in the shot is the Danny DeVito character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because Danny DeVito is playing a character in the movie.
Right.
That's a great moment, because they get everybody back.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
I love that film. It's absolutely one of my favorite Carrey films.
It is. And did you see, you know, they even did a documentary about the making of that movie.
Yes, they did.
Which was pretty awesome. You could still see it up on Netflix.
Yep.
I am also scrolling through this list, and it'd be hard pressed to come up with other years where you've got such a amazing eclectic list of filmmakers that are behind these movies. I mean, I'm just scrolling through here, and it's a really of a passing of the torch too, because you've got Erwin Winkler, you've got Sidney Lumet, mm-hmm. Sidney Lumet, depending, you know, whatever. You've got Joe Johnston. Joel Schumacher comes out with two movies this year. Gary Marshall, Harold Ramis, Guy Ritchie, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. I think is that his debut?
That is his debut.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you've got, and then the world would find out about, you know, be introduced to Jason Statham too, right?
Yep.
Bob Clark, Clint Eastwood, Ron Howard, the Wachowskis, of course. Robert Altman, Pedro, how do you pronounce that? Almodovar, right? Roland Joffe, David Cronenberg, Stephen Sommers, Jim Jarmusch, of course, George Lucas, Wim Wenders, Jay Roach, Simon West. I think that was Simon West. It's one of his first movies. Barry Sonnenfeld. Again, Spike Lee,
yep.
Stanley Kubrick, Steve Miner, Jean Dumont. I think that's one of his first movies. Rennie Harlan, Gary Marshall, Brad Bird, M. Night Shyamalan, we've already talked about.
Yep.
Frank Oz, Adam Rifkin. I know I'm going on, but it's like the list here is just amazing in terms of talent. Sam
and
Mendes.
Thank you. That was the one I was waiting for American Beauty.
Sam Raimi, Lawrence Kasdan, Jay Roach, Sidney Pollack, David Fincher, Rob Reiner, David Lynch,
mm-hmm.
Martin Scorsese, Antonio Banderas, I think makes his directorial debut, Wes Craven, the really creepy Music of the Heart, that's so frightening, Michael Mann, Kevin Smith, Adam Egoyan, Luc Besson, Barry Levinson, Tim Burton, Michael Apted, Peter Himes, Joel Schumacher, John Lasseter. I mean, these like Neil Jordan, Woody Allen, Frank Darabont. I mean, this is Ang Lee, Chris Columbus, Oliver Stone, Milos Forman, Alan Parker. Like this is just like a who's who of like some of the best directors out there ever.
Well, and if we've got being John Malkovich, we can't forget about Spike Jonze.
Right. Yes. Spike Lee and Spike Jonze make movies.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
A pair of spikes. Yep.
I just like this is. I dare say I can't really call. It's not like all these movies were winners, right? But there just is something about this that strikes me as like. Like, I don't know if I want to call it like a golden age. It's not like 1939, which is like just this powerhouse year of that changes Hollywood and movies forever. There's a lot of big movies here, but there's a lot of like, there's just when I'm looking at this, if I look at the list of movies that are being made now, and maybe it's just me because I don't recognize half the names of people who are making.
Yeah, this movies. Was, I guess, just what you can take away from that. Amazing long list that we just got from Mike is this was a sort of a transition year and a crossroads year where everybody was in the mix. You had that old Hollywood and some directors that their careers were winding down at this point, and these amazing new people like the Wachowskis and so on and Spike Jonze are coming up. But this intersection kind of happened in 99.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it even started a little bit earlier than that because you take a look at like the year of 94. With Kevin Smith and Robert Rodriguez and Tarantino really kind of coming to fruition. It happens every generation. I mean, Kubrick, Lucas, Scorsese all hit at the same time. You know, it's this moment where you just have this plethora, but right here, yeah, you've definitely got a pretty incredible cross-reference of the future of filmmaking and the past of filmmaking. And I think that's one of the reasons why 99 was certainly one of those pivotal years, because as you said, a lot of these films, not strong at the box office, but yet lay the foundation for future greatness. I mean, without Iron Giant, we don't get The Incredibles.
Right.
Exactly.
Without 8mm, we don't get, you know, all the stuff that JJ's done that, you know, divides the entire internet. I'm looking at you, Star Trek fans and Star Wars fans. So,
and Mike mentioned Ron Howard on that list, and Ron Howard's movie in 99 was Ed TV. That was the one with
McConaughey.
As a guy that there's just, they make a TV show out of his life by just pointing cameras at this guy all the time. This was 1999. So this was like the year before Survivor kind of made reality TV explode.
Yeah.
So that movie really kind of, you know, showed what was coming in a way that, and again, we didn't realize like that does, the concept does not seem that outrageous anymore in this world of websites. And
no,
not at all. But it's interesting because Ed TV at the time, it's just a ripoff of the Truman Show.
Yeah.
That type of stuff. I remember that.
Which was not a fair criticism. And I prefer Ed TV to Truman Show. I thought it was actually a much better movie.
I kind of do too. I think when it works a little bit better, but yeah, I mean, without Ed TV, you don't really see Real Housewives or worse, the Kardashians.
So we can blame them, right?
I blame Ed TV. Shame on you, Ron Howard.
McConaughey and Woody Harrelson together. So I consider this a prequel to True Detective.
No, there you go.
All right.
Yep.
Head cannon now.
I actually haven't seen either one of those. So I can't speak to this.
You've never seen that? Wow.
No, I've never seen either Ed TV or
Truman Show.
Truman Show, yeah. I haven't seen either one of those.
He's a big fan of Keeping Up with the Kardashians though, so it's all right.
Yeah. I am, yes. It's so amazing because I'm looking at the list and I've seen a lot of these movies, but there's a ton of them that I haven't seen. I mean, I haven't seen The Green Mile.
Wow.
I haven't seen Man on the Moon.
Mm. Oh, well, good night, folks. That's the end of the show.
The moment where we lose all street cred.
I guess when everybody's watching that, I went and saw Ghost Dog, and I love that movie.
Oh, so, nice.
Way of the Samurai with Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Oh, that's I mean, don't you see? Now, that's a movie. I don't know if that gets made today.
No.
Like, there's just those, I mean, there's these little small movies that, I just don't think they get made. There's just not the, unless it's like a big franchise thing or something that maybe you might have some Oscar credibility, like, you know, and even Netflix and the streaming services aren't making stuff like this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even the lighter fare, Varsity Blues, which was just another interpretation of Friday Night Lights. And I'm not being mean on that. I literally mean, it's another interpretation of the book Friday Night Lights, because they just took a different portion of it and did this film through MTV.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But Varsity Blues, Varsity Blues doesn't get made now.
You don't think so?
No. Because, I mean, again, when was the last time you saw a film like Varsity Blues? Maybe The Program in 94? Or 93? That was the one about the Florida one where they had to cut the clip of the people laying in the street while the cars are passing by them.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. It's just because, I mean, all Varsity Blues is it's, you know, high school kids who were, you know, drinking and having sex after football games. And it's, you know,
with
abusive parents. And
is that where we got introduced? No, that's not where we got introduced, Jessica Biel, because that was TV show, right? Seventh Heaven.
Yeah, but I believe it is where we got introduced to Paul Walker.
Oh, that might be.
Yeah,
that might be.
So,
right. You also that year also had Election with Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, wow.
Which was still an amazing show. I still don't know how I feel
about that film. I still don't know how I feel about that movie. I think I didn't like it.
Really?
But I can't say for sure. Yeah.
Oh, there were some very intense scenes in that one. And to me, I didn't go see it because I thought it was just another one of those MTV movie type movies and everything. And friends went to see it. Dude, you got to go see this. And it is pretty. Reese Witherspoon plays a total high school psycho. Like, I rank it up there with almost her character in this is almost as good as American Psycho.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a dark comedy, and Reese, this was an early role where she really stood out as a major talent. And kind of, there were a lot of those teen movies were kind of popping around again, you know, with American Pie and Jawbreaker was 99 also with Rose McGowan.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of a Heather's type of thing.
And Detroit Rock City is also another that nice little high school movies.
You know, one that I wanted to mention, that kind of a small movie that, yeah, I don't hear people talk about, and it's really a favorite of mine and Felicity's also, Still Crazy. You guys know this one? It's sort of the premise is almost like Spinal Tap. It's not a fake documentary like Spinal Tap, but it's about a rock band, like a washed up rock band from the 70s getting back together. Like this, all these old hard rock guys, the band's been out of commission for years.
Yes.
They get back together and try to relaunch the band. And it's very funny. The music is actually really good in it. It has a lot of heart as well. Billy Connolly is in it, that Scottish comedian and actor Bill Nighy is in it. It's really, really nice little movie that I don't think it really got any attention at all, but that's something that people should look out for. Still Crazy.
There's a moment they wind up going to, like, don't they spend like a lot of time in somebody's house?
Yeah.
Like to try to get rebuilt. Mm-hmm. I've seen this movie. Yes. It's wonderful. And Bill Nighy basically plays the same character that he winds up playing in Love Actually, because he's this pompous,
kind of
rocker that's like
the burnt out lead singer.
Yes.
it's terrific. I really recommend people look that one up.
1999 is also the last Pierce Brosnan Bond film. That's pretty awesome.
Oh yes, The World Is Not Enough.
Yeah, well, you know. I mean, you know, he went out on top.
Mm, okay. Mm.
I don't care what anybody else said. This is the last one.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I won't mention the others.
No, there's no others. This is the last one. This is the final one. All right. So it's hard, I know, to wind this up, but I'm wondering what you guys think. All right. So as far as 1999, this is like not just, you know, the beginning or the end of a decade, right? This is the end of a century. Do you think there's anything to that about like the sort of the end of a decade or coming, like turning a corner where there's maybe a release of creative energy that, I mean, I don't know, does it sound ridiculous or do you think there's something to support that with, especially when you look at 39, you look at 69, you look at 99, and you could pull other years too. I mean, 1989 was a pretty solid year. 89 was a
massive movie year. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think that in retrospect we attach meaning and themes to movie years in a way that probably was not. It's not like all of Hollywood got together and had a big meeting and said, "All right, here's what we're going to do for the year 1999." But that said, even if we're attaching our ideas and our themes that we see emerge through nostalgia and retrospect and looking at lists like this, there's some validity in that. You can look at those kind of sweeping overall themes as to what was happening in Hollywood. And to some extent, it's coincidence that, you know, that there's big movies and great movies and important movies being made all the time, every year, every couple of years. And so just by the sake of random clumpiness, there are going to be years where a whole bunch of that stuff happens all in the same year. And this was one of those years. Yeah. Yeah, the fact that it's 1999, it's the end of the 1900s, is kind of fun that it was a big major movie year. And it's also capping a century.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just nostalgia sake. I personally would go, I feel like creatively, and I mean, that's despite looking at this amazing list, I think creatively the 90s movies were 94, 95, where you had such diversity as your pulps, your Usual Suspects, your, I mean, even Desperado, films like that, that were, you know, a little bit different while at the same time still having great movies coming, you know, years later. I think there's a lot of greatness that just happens to come out right at this time that honestly, you look at this list and there's a lot of these movies that just can't be made anymore. The proof's in the pudding on The Mummy. Mummy was number 8 that year. And when they did a reboot for as part of the Dark Universe thing for Universal, it beyond tanked. Like, I don't think it made this much money for 99. So I, you know, it's, you see so many things that have just stuck in our pop culture for all of this time. And I, you know, but it's possible that, you know, 20 years from now, a group are going to be talking about all the big movies that came out for this year and talking about how it was a great, it won't be one of us. It'll be something else. It'll all be major celebrities on their podcast, but they'll all be raving about, you know, the last Star Wars film or the second Frozen movie back before they realized that it was a 10 movie chapter series, you know? So I don't know. I mean, some of these films have really stood the test of time while others just kind of got mixed up with other films. So, but I mean, it's a great list.
It is an amazing list. And that's why, you know, it was a great idea to come up with this, because it was just movie after movie after movie after movie. Hell, you could do a series of podcasts, just each movie and everything, just 90, call it the films of 99, and just go through the whole list. And right there, you probably would have 100 movie series and podcasts.
I do know that someone has released a book, the films of 1999, and it's a pretty, I listened to the author talk about it, and it's I mean, he takes it very seriously, and but it sounds like it's a fun read. So I'm kind of curious to see, because really ultimately what's really happening here is that the whole, like, world is at the time afraid of the, you know, Y2K virus and thinking that it's going to be the end of everything. So they're just this, they're just releasing everything creatively they can, right? I mean, that's what's happening here, right?
Oh, of course. You know, the world was coming to an end. Let's get all this stuff out before Y2K.
Yeah, this is like, this is what we're, this, you know, these are the movies we're going to release before, like, we, before the end, before we die. These are the last movies that anybody wants to see, right? So I think that's what it is, you know.
That
and
is funny.
You know, I'll leave it at that. So thanks, guys. With that said, we will take a quick break and then we'll be ready to shout out and get out of here.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about the world according to Jeff Goldblum. So there's this show on Disney Plus that has Jeff Goldblum going around and learning about all new topics that he didn't know about. He learns about barbecue, denim, gaming, all types of stuff, and it's really fascinating to watch. He shows how interacting with all different types of people can show how different we are, but also how similar we are, in that we all have similar customs, but they differ as well. It also shows us that you never stop learning, no matter how old you are. You can always learn something new, and you shouldn't stop trying to do that. This show is a lot of fun, and it's really cool to see all the random different stuff that I never really thought I would, you know, pursue to learn about, and how learning about random stuff is fun. As someone who was a teacher for years, you never stop learning, and this show has a really unique perspective to learning about different topics, and if you're able to watch it on Disney Plus, don't pass it up. It's a lot of fun. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Air Station One podcast. I want to thank our guests for being here. Alex, thank you so much, sir.
Pleasure's all mine.
Anything you want to shout out about?
I do. I screwed up on this show. We were talking earlier about the movie 8mm, and I got it confused with the movie Super 8. So before people start posting comments about how wrong that was, we know.
Okay.
But yeah, it was great coming on. I enjoyed it.
Well, for another correction, because I said Netflix started in 1999. It actually started in 97.
Oh, well,
so, wow. 2 years earlier.
I'm still contending that World Is Not Enough is the last Pierce Brosnan Bond movie, though. That's not a mistake.
Okay. And he'll go down to his grave saying that, too, which is pretty darn awesome. So, folks, if you, you know, want to talk to Mike Gordon about it, whenever you see him at a con, feel free, walk up to his table and say, about that James Bond stuff, dude. So it'd be pretty easy. And Kevin, thank you.
Hey, always a pleasure, guys. Great to get up here and talk about what from our perspective on the Flopcast, the super modern era of the late 90s.
You got a glimpse into the future today.
Pretty much, yes.
I know it's not Meatballs 4, but, you know.
Yeah, we're a little behind the times on the Flopcast. We spent the summer watching all the horrifying sequels to Meatballs. It's how we spent our summer.
Oh, including the one with the alien in it?
Yeah, including the alien. That was rough. It was rough. Yeah, you can find us here on the ESO Network on the Flopcast. We do that show, very silly show, every single week. And, man, man, we are creeping up on episode 400 of the Flopcast. That's how we're
I remember those days.
The year 2020, I believe. We're going to start with our episode 400.
Congratulations, sir.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And anybody, if you're in the Boston area like me and you're willing to risk freezing to death, come on out to Aresia convention we have in Boston in the middle of January. I'll be there. I'll be doing panels and stuff. So hope to see you there.
That is awesome. I always know when there's going to be a con on a holiday, the Flopcast will be there. It's always good.
We do enjoy the holidays.
Exactly. And Mr. Mike, thank you, sir.
As always, it was my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
I'm going to give a quick shout out recommendation. If everybody out there has Disney Plus, like who doesn't, right? And everybody's talking about Baby Yoda and everybody's talking about Mandalorian and, you know, what is or is not unavailable on Disney Plus to watch, whatever. I know some people have already clued into this, but I think it needs to be more widespread. One of the best series that's on Disney Plus is The Imagineering Story.
Oh, it's amazing.
This is, I've watched, 4 episodes now and, they're getting caught up like to the present. So I'm almost sad that, that it might be ending soon. I don't know what the shelf life on the, or how many episodes this is going to be or what it's going to do like fully, but it's basically the journey or behind the scenes of Walt Disney parks, Imagineering, the people who design the parks, the people who design the park rides, et cetera, et cetera. And basically the development center of the Walt Disney Company. And, you know, a lot is said about Disney and their corporate, you know, their corporateness, right? As far as being the evil mouse or whatever, evil corporations. But I got to tell you, I don't, most of the Imagineers that certainly are talked about and that I've had the, you know, become aware of, they don't have an evil bone in their body. These guys are amazing at what they do, and what they do is amazing. Like, it's just, it's one of those things that it's like, I wish I could go back in time and somehow, like, you know, become an intern and develop, like, be part of this crew, because it's what almost every company should be. I think, like, it's just the thought behind it and just the I don't know, the genius behind it of what they do is just amazing,
Mr. Gordon.
You have to see it, like, really, because I think a lot of people see the rides, they go on the rides, but they don't really think about what it took to make these rides and how amazing that these efforts were. So someone has actually documented it, and it's like I said, one of the best shows I've seen, like, on anything this year.
That's awesome. That is really cool. It's an amazing show, and I just loved it. I loved the first one and talking about, you know, how things were disarrayed at Disneyland when they were opening, and, you know, even the first couple of days, you know, the people were flooding in, but, you know, things were like held together barely and everything. It was just awesome. And the ideas, and then Walt coming up with these new ideas and saying, let's do this, and, you know, talking to them and everything.
Well, Walt, like, was a great captain in the fact that he, like, he had a vision and he steered, but he also allowed others to, I mean, he gave them the confidence in a lot of ways, like, more confidence than they had in themselves in doing projects that just seemed impossible. And, you know, it's amazing to me that, you know, a lot of outsiders will look at Walt Disney and say this, that, and the other thing, but you talk about a lot of the people who worked for Walt, especially the people who worked right underneath them. None of them have, like, bad things to say. Like, well, there might be one or two, but for the most part, I mean, it was a great environment. And, you know, I think it still exists to some extent now, but certainly they're one of the few companies. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're one of the most successful companies.
That's very true. I agree with that.
That was a really long shout out. Sorry about that.
That's okay. you know, it's our show. We could do whatever we want. It's okay. It really doesn't really matter. But speaking of mattering, for me, for my shout out, I saw this really awesome movie on Netflix the other day. It's called Dolomite. I don't know if anyone's heard of it.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy is back with a vengeance. And this is based off a true story from the 1970s. Black exploitation movies are the focus on this, about a down and out singer, actor, comedian. And he creates this character called Dolomite, and he creates a film around it. And it is awesome. It's the best thing I've probably seen Eddie Murphy in at least 10 years.
I've heard Wesley Snipes is fun in it too.
Oh, he is. He's pretty darn awesome. And it's just a lot of fun. And I just liked it. And get a chance, take a peek at it. It was out at the theaters for a couple of days because they wanted to do like what they did with The Irishman, and, you know, try to get it considered for Best Picture with the Academy Awards and such. So it's definitely worth checking out. And, you know, if you like Eddie Murphy, if you like a good story, please check it out. I'd highly recommend it. And, you know, if you don't want to sit for 3 hours watching The Irishman, I'd also recommend it too. So it's pretty awesome. All right, that's going to wrap up the show. We will be back again next week. And look at this. We're going to the movies again next week. We are going to be looking at the movies Knives Out. It's going to be awesome. If we want a true murder mystery, we are going to get it here. And which one of us will survive? Which one was the culprit? You're going to have to listen to find out. Until then, my name is Mike Faber. We will see you here next time on the Air Station One podcast. Peace. And we are done. Boom. You've been listening to the Air Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Air Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.